This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, to comment on the World Island, that is, Europe and Asia. The World Island is dominated by two empires, not simultaneously. The Chinese Empire, and the Chinese Empire started to fade in about the 16th, 17th, 18th century, just as the Russian Empire, Peter the Great to Catherine the Great, organized itself and expanded its power across the pivot nation, the heartland, Russia, 10, 11 time zones. Professor, a very good evening to you. You have observed in an ironic fashion that what we're looking at, these Eurasian empires working side by side but not simultaneously, is that in their effort to transform themselves, to modernize themselves, to catch up with what they perceive to be the Western advantage, something like Peter the Great, how he, when his embassy, he sent all the gimmicks he could find back to Moscow and told people to reproduce them. Well, in their effort to catch up, Stalin, I remember, talked about, we're going to do 5 years in four, and bought everything he could find in the American market, including Ford assembly plants and Goodyear tire plants and whole cities and steel manufacturing designed by Americans. Bought it as quickly as he could with the gold that he had from the Tsars. And China, we see China here in the 20th and 21st century lavishly pouring its money into catching up, to matching America, to matching the West, both of them in different eras, acting as if they have to catch up or they'll be left behind. And you have described it as modernization. The additional irony is that modernization led to great tragedy. This tragedy, the Russian Revolution of the 20th century and the Chinese Revolution of the 20th century now continuing into the 21st, is it in some fashion a positive for these empires? Did they themselves understand what they were doing in their mass murder and the famine and the starvation and the brutality, that they were attempting to catch up, perhaps too quickly, but they had a plan in mind? Good evening to you.
Good evening. I would answer that by saying no, as there were no positive achievements, I would say, for the people of China or Russia under communist rule. And there was certainly no advance in living standards or technology, nothing that would not have been better if they had had a freer system. We must remember that the number of people who died in peacetime and good weather in Russia is authoritatively placed at 70 million for the entire period of the Soviet Union. And for China, where we don't have the detailed records, it's generally thought to be at least 70 million. So this is an immense, what it is, it was an immense catastrophic gamble, which had the opportunity cost. It meant that they couldn't modernize during most of the 20th century. And it meant that when they did decide to start doing things that would work, which China hasn't decided to do yet, that that they were way behind. And I would say that right now Russia is sort of coming up a bit for reasons we've talked about before, namely the fact that she still has all those resources. Most Chinese commentators feel that the period just a few years ago, when there were books coming about how the Chinese China was going to rule the world as a result of the economic miracle, that's not true at all. China is now on a downward slope, a downward path, unless something radical is done to change it.
And observing their attempts to modernize too quickly or not organically, was it because they ignored their own people? Is there an explanation for it? The reason I ask is America modernized in keeping with Europe. We were eager early on to find the resources we needed, the intellectual property is what we call it today, in Europe. I remember a story, I don't have the details, about dyeing, the dye industry that was moved from France to Britain during the revolution of the 18th century. And then Americans copied it so that we set up dyeing factories, cloth dyeing factories, in New England. It was probably intellectual property theft, but in any event, it was an effort to match our industry with European industry. Eventually, we would match it very well. But we didn't. That didn't lead to mass murder and famine. So how is it that
mass murder and famine are bad, and they're bad both from a humane point of view and from an economic, from a hard-headed economic realist point of view. If you want your country to grow, you don't murder the population. What you have to do is mobilize the talents of the population. In the Soviet Union, although elite education was very good, and certain institutes, areas like physics and chemistry and art and music and so forth, did quite well when it came to the training, the great talent of that existed in Russia was wasted because it was placed in political shackles. And I would say, and I often make this remark to Chinese friends of mine who agree emphatically, that no country in the world wastes talent more profligately than China does. China is teeming with talent. Yet, where do these talents succeed? When they leave China and come somewhere else. Why is that? Because the system in China is corrupt, and it is designed, it is not designed to mobilize talent. It's, if anything, it's designed to prevent any kind of originality.
Therefore, what we're looking at today is the result of this attempt to modernize. And to my understanding, to my reading, Russia is no longer conducting purges and mass murders and forcible transportation of populations, no longer doing any of that. I talked to Novosibirsk, I talked to Moscow. These are modern cities attempting to deal with the pandemic. At the same time, they participate in global media, and they're sensitive about how they're perceived. I can't say the same for China because I don't have a reporter on the ground because of conditions. Conditions have deteriorated for transparency. But would you say that Russia, let's say to that Eurasian empire, has learned from its rush to modernize in the 20th century and no longer will conduct itself in such a high-handed fashion?
I think that the Russians understand, certainly Russian economists, people in the Russian government, there are plenty of criminals and people who line their own pockets, including perhaps even Mr. Putin himself. But the Russians understand that communism was a disaster and that the only way that they can get ahead is by harnessing, by allowing the talent of their own people to flourish. I often ask, think of all of the great Russian composers, say, from the St. Petersburg Conservatory and the Moscow Conservatory. And think of how many of them, like Stravinsky, for instance, made their careers in the West. What would music in Russia be like today, and it's outstanding, if those conservatories had simply been allowed to continue to do what they're already doing better than anybody else? The Russians understand that. In China, discourse, discussion is so totally throttled by the party and the propaganda apparatus and indoctrination and censorship and all the rest, that the people who know what should be done have no influence, and if they speak too loudly or even a little bit about what should be done, they may be disappeared or they may be suicided or something. China now is probably as repressive a state as we've ever seen in history. And, of course, the price that she is paying is a very, very tangible drop in the standard of everything.
Speaking to Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, about the Eurasian empires, the Russian Empire and the Chinese Empire, once upon a time, rush to modernize that led to the catastrophe, as the professor says, of the 20th century. When we come back, how does Washington here in 2021 perceive these two empires, these two competitors? This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.